what it is, and then the public has to know what they're testifying to. So I'll just park this one comment. There is no housing that we manage in this city where we say we'll leave it to a community advisory process to establish the standards under which we expect people will live and be transitioned to other housing. We don't do that. So we're in an area here that's new. And I completely understand that it's an emergency, and we as a council declared an emergency and said we're going to welcome innovation and experimentation. But we do have a well-established set of policies and practices which are designed to make programs successful. So when I hear that is to be determined and we don't have expectations and it'll be done through a community advisory process, we are getting far afield here. So, I mean, we'll come back to have that discussion.
Yeah, and speaking of field, let me reiterate Commissioner Fritz's suggestion that we get to public testimony. And there's no doubt going to be a need for council discussion about how this fits into our overall programmatic effort. But I guess I also want to remind the council, and you can ponder this while we deliberate later on this, and that is Commissioner Saltzman is in the process of leading a process by which our homeless services staff are transferred to Multnomah County. So this is a rest area, not a housing project. We will be in the housing project development business, and Multnomah County will be in the homeless services business if the transition that Commissioner Saltzman is leading goes forward. And so I think it would certainly be appropriate for us to discuss with Multnomah County how this particular homeless service facility will be supported by local government.
They're not even part of this process, Mayor.
They certainly can be through a home for everyone and through other means. So, again, I would recommend that we save that discussion of ways and means and procedures until after we hear from the public about the basic proposition of should Right to Dream 2 go here.
But I think that's right. But, again, now what we've said is that the Housing Bureau and Multnomah County, the two entities that have the experience and the knowledge and the history and, in fact, the charter to address these questions, may be engaged at some point in the future. And I would say, why haven't they been engaged in the front end if they are the community experts in making these things successful?
I think they've been engaged to an extent. We might want to hear from them later in this hearing. Right to Dream 2 has existed for some time now in a different location. We are having a location discussion.
And I would say that the Safety Off the Streets work group did include jurisdictional staff members from across the board. It also included included folks from the county, from the city. At the time that it started, I was actually a Portland Housing Bureau staff member who was staffing the committee.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Can I just ask one quick question? Why a 10-year agreement? Is this truly a 10-year agreement? If we're going to all swallow this, understand it, trust it, and it's experimental, can't we do a shorter agreement with some kind of renewal?
That would have been a request from Hosford Abernethy as well. It would be 2 years.
We can certainly consider that.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think
Thank
Right to Dream would be more than happy if their services weren't needed after 2 years.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's turn to testimony, please.
Okay. We have 37 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Andy James, Terry Parker, and Debbie Kitchen. And they'll be followed by M. Mayo, Lightning Watchdog PDX, and Gary Renberg.
We're doing 2 minutes?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
And just so that folks know, we were allowing our invited panelists, since, as you saw, they had a broad range of opinions, additional time. The longer you go over 2 minutes, the less likely it is that the people at the last end of the list will have time to testify today.
Welcome. Go ahead.
Hi, Andy James, Wise Real Estate Advisors. Portland has a long and legendary zoning code that has been held up by other groups, other cities, as being the stalwart. And what we're talking about here is an elegant manipulation of the code to allow for a residential use. The fundamental thing is that Right to Dream 2 is doing an exceptional job in a tough situation. But we shouldn't put them in a situation which would essentially degrade their own safety and quality of life. It's not just East Side Plating's use, but we've got rail yards across the street which no one can control what could be stored on those tracks and what could potentially happen. We owe all the citizens of Portland, whether they have a house or not, a safe, peaceful, enjoyable place to rest their head. This is not that location. I would suggest council spend a night there. Trains are clacking all night. Trucks are going by all night. This is not a restful and peaceful place, and we do enjoy that as being one of the fundamental things of a residential use. This is an industrial zone, and it should be maintained as an industrial zone. We've seen the problem with the bullseye glass. I think we're exposing the city and its general liability across the board to a point where I would suggest that we can do better. We can do better. I talked previously with Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Hales about Wapato. Maybe the Terminal 1 location would be a better site, 14 acres, flat level, and available. I'd also like to say that since this is a land use decision under ORS 197, I would request a continuance or that the record be held open for at least 7 days for the submittal of additional evidence.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity. Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. I'm speaking as an individual today. To illustrate my concerns, I'm going to tell you a short story. Within the past few years, homeless people broke into four vintage railroad passenger cars that were stored in Willits, California. They started fires in the cars to keep warm. Three of the four cars were so badly damaged they were eventually scrapped. In 1984, these cars were leased as part of a 13-car contest for the Louisiana World's Fair Daylight from Portland to New Orleans in return. This special train was powered by the only remaining daylight steam locomotive, which is now housed at the Oregon Rail Heritage Center. When this recreation of a full-length red and orange daylight train traversed Tehachapi Loop near Los Angeles, Interstate 5 became a parking lot. There were three TV news helicopters overhead, and the media estimated there were 100,000 people who lined the track to watch this train travel over what is a marvel of railroad engineering. This is a big deal. My primary concern about moving R2-D2 to the Southeast 3rd and Harrison site is the close proximity to the Oregon Rail Heritage Center. In the 80s and early 90s, I spent numerous volunteer hours working on and helping to restore the steam locomotives and rail passenger equipment now at the center. Since R2-D2 will be a sanctioned camp on city property, and since the camp will likely attract other homeless people to the area, what liability will the city take on to help protect the irreplaceable rail equipment, historic rail equipment, that is on the nearby museum property? Good neighbor agreements have no teeth. Secondly, and just as important, the public process has been stifled and is broken. Shame on any of you that supported disallowing public testimony about the use of the property at the City Council hearing related to its purchase, specifically when the reason for the purchase of the property was to move R2-D2 was already predetermined, and that's affirmed in your handout. Without enhanced neighborhood protections associated with the close proximity of the Oregon Rail Heritage Center, and on the grounds that far too much of the public process has been bypassed and not followed, I am opposed to moving R2-D2 to the Southeast 3rd and Harrison site. You might perceive this as NIMBYism. However, the insistence by the City Council to move R2-D2 out of Old Town is far more of a NIMBY mindset. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Debbie Kitchen, a business owner and property owner in the Central East Side. I served as co-chair of the Southeast Quadrant Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Through a long, rigorous process over 2 years, the committee, along with excellent leadership from the City of Portland staff, developed the Southeast Quadrant Plan. And in that, we affirmed the importance of the industrial sanctuary for our district. In fact, one of the overarching land use objectives was to maintain the viability of industrial zone lands in the Central East Side as a place where existing operations are protected from non-compatible land uses, where industrial operators can feel secure about investing in their businesses, and where all industrial sectors, as well as those yet to emerge, find a place to operate. The city's zoning code recognizes that residential uses are not compatible with industrial uses. As a result, residential uses are prohibited in industrial zones. Your yes vote on the proposed agenda items violates the goals of the comprehensive plan and is not consistent. The ZCL seeks to avoid the prohibition of housing in the industrial zone by stating that the tents contemplated for shelter are not structures under the code. However, it is clear that fences, platforms, decks, and other attributes of the current site are for Right to Dream 2 are structures and do not comply with the code. They would not be allowed under this ZCL. The primary use of the site is short-term housing, and that's prohibited in the IG1 zone. The ZCL also acknowledges that stays of over 30 days are not allowed by this interpretation of the code. It was said at a community meeting and also in the presentation today that there would be 14 resident Dreamers staying at the camp and managing it, for possibly for periods of time longer than 30 days. Will the Right to Dream 2 operation organization be responsible for maintaining the records to verify that the condition of longer than 30 days is not being violated? I have other comments that I've submitted in written form, but okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Thank you all. Okay.
Next three are M. Mayo, Lightning Watchdog PDX, Gary Renberg, and they'll be followed by Scott Henriksen, Jeremy Horn, and Tracy Fink.
Go ahead. I'll be shy, whoever'd like to be first.
My name is Michael Mayo, and I'm the secretary of the Cascadia chapter of the Green Party of this city, and I'm not a member of the Southeast Quadrant, and I'm not a homeless person, and I'm not a business owner. What I'm here to do is to just tell you the truth about the matter of moving R2D2. When R2D2 established itself years ago, if Portland city government had the right attitude toward homeless, why, that property owner would have been showered with praise for having provided R2D2 with a place to do its healing of the community. On the contrary, the city government socked that property owner with $5,000 fee for his civic activity. They said he wasn't following various laws. Yes, it's true. The city has an option of how rigorously, how strictly it enforces the millions and millions of lines of code that it requires of every citizen to follow. And that's an option the city has. The city has spent now, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and 3 years finding an alternate location for R2D2. And as the previous speaker a while ago said, that really shows the attitude of this city. We're moving R2D2. It's a big deal to move R2D2 because we don't want the downtown area of our city to have a homeless camp in it. And I'm telling you, as a politician, that if you wanted to demonstrate real community action, you would welcome a homeless camp in the middle of downtown Portland, and you would say that is how we make a statement about what our community consists of.
Who's next?
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. Again, I'm impressed with the work of R2D2. I really like the looks of this camp, or what we're going to call a community service use. One of the concerns I have on here is that we're always talking about doing more long-term type leases for affordable uses or community service use such as this camp, and I have a real problem with this 10-year lease. Every time you talk about doing your 60 years, I want to see a 60-year lease on this agreement. I don't want to see R2D2 leave the Burnside location till they get those type of terms. I have another issue on this agreement is that money that was given per se by the developer, I don't want that money used on this project. I want that money to be used by R2D2 in the manner that they want to use that money. I want to see this project funded by the Portland Housing Bureau, which, Mr. Saltzman, you seem to have a problem with using funding from the Portland Housing Bureau toward R2D2. I don't see what your problem is. I don't see why the city does not fund this project and do a $1 lease to R2D2 and they retain their money that was given by the developer to allocate where they want to allocate that money, not where the city wants that money to go. So I have a real problem with this overall deal. I want them to stay at their Burnside site, get the terms they want. If they don't get their terms, stay at that site and see if Mr. Nato's going to develop that hotel next to him. If he doesn't, that's your loss. That's your big loss, and you'll have to take it. Now, again, I do not want them paying any of their money that was given to them by the developer on this project, period. And I want the city to pay their utilities. I want the city to pay the expenses. And I want the city to pay their insurance. All costs paid by the city, or they stay where they're at. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Gary Renberg, President, Eastside Plating. Thankfulness. Mayor, thank you for the privilege of using your property for our deliveries. Thank you for that.
It will continue.
Thank you for the offer of a dollar. Thank you for the kind words that you've made about our operations. We are proud of who we are, and we appreciate that. So thank you for those things. I have huge respect for the RTD2 process, the relocation. I know it's been a challenge. I serve 129 employees, and their safety is my primary purpose. I do not see this location adjacent to an industrial facility as being good public policy from a safety standpoint. There's a federal agent that works with our firm that counsels us on how to keep chemistries that we offer in our location out of the hands of terrorists. And those individuals aren't allowed to be involved in public issues or policies. But we have industrial processes, we have industrial zoning, we have industrial activities, and it's just not safe from a public policy standpoint to do anything. When I first heard of this in May, I approached three different first responders that we rely on for emergency response in the event of an emergency. And I just mentioned the city council is considering this relocation, and the comments from each of those parties was, that's crazy. Aside from what's being twisted in the zoning consideration, please don't consider placing a vulnerable population in an industrial area. Thanks.
So Mr. Renberg, I signalized I'm going to ask this question. So I'm curious, does Eastside Plating emit any air quality issues related to hazardous air pollutants? Do you have a permit or are there emissions?
This facility does have an air quality discharge permit. We've done sampling. We've been real successful with chrome emissions most recently. EPA did a significant reduction, up to like a 90% reduction in the permissionable exposure level, the PEL, for worker safety. Okay. And so we've accomplished that. Most of our exposures are with solutions and chemistries, primarily. Their exposures are very modest.
So is chromium the only air emission, or cadmium arsenic lead?
It's been the dominant piece. Some of the materials that we use, we use some lead anodes in a chrome process, but they're really not emissions that are material. No. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Next three are Scott Hendrickson, Jeremy Horn, and Tracy Fink, and they'll be followed by Tim Lamb, Linda Crossan, and Dan Yates.
Hi, I'm Scott Hendrickson. I'm the Environmental Health and Safety Manager for Eastside Plating. As has been pointed out, we are an industrial facility in an industrially zoned area. We work with corrosive and toxic chemicals on a daily basis. We have worked safely with them, as you've pointed out. We've been doing that since 1946. But even so, we still have to plan for contingencies. EPA regulations, OSHA regulations, the City of Portland's own codes require us to develop contingency plans. One of those contingencies is a site evacuation. With the type of chemicals that we have here, we would, depending on what the release was, small or large, we would have to isolate the area around the building for up to 150 feet for small spills, maybe 300 feet for a large release, and if we go into a nighttime situation, then those distances increase to a tenth of a mile. We spend a lot of time training our employees on how to work around our chemistry safely. We have a lot of training programs in place and safety programs. We spend an hour with each and every new employee just going over the basics of those programs. We also require that all those new employees have 2 weeks of on-the-job training with a supervisor or other experienced operator to make sure that they're able to implement those programs safely while they're learning before they're allowed to work alone. We do annual refresher training with everyone. Supervisors also get an additional hour a month just on the specifics of the programs. I'm skeptical that the city can ensure that a group of people living in tents right next to this facility are going to be adequately prepared to deal with that type of contingency if the worst happens, which we all know could happen. There are earthquake hazards, natural hazards. There are things there. Even the Multnomah County Emergency Management Group is starting to incorporate hazardous materials into their contingency plans. For those reasons, I really don't think that the city should be undermining the zoning codes for this purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Jeremy Horn. I'm the technical director at Eastside Plating. I just want to kind of reiterate what Scott said. I'm going a little bit off script here. I heard something about training the population there in terms of emergency reactions and things like that. But these people are going to be temporary, a day, 2 days, a week. How are they going to get that training? And who's going to do it? I'm a chemical engineer. Scott is actually as well. So we have the expertise and we have the education to train people, to train our employees on how to safely deal with these things in case of emergencies. Who's going to train this vulnerable population living literally right next door? Very concerned. And I'm from a safety standpoint. I'm a chemical engineer. I know how to handle that stuff. I guarantee you nobody in those tents would know. My name is Jeremy Horn. So the nature of our business requires us to handle numerous hazardous materials and dispose of the wastes these processes generate responsibly. From a chemical engineer standpoint, such as myself, I love the chemistry that makes metal finishing possible, where customers' parts look better, they're more corrosion resistant, and function more successfully. We train all of our employees on the hazards associated with our business, from proper storage requirements to safe handling, to the personal protective equipment we use in daily work activities. Occasionally, we need to improve our processes or add processing capability to offer services to customers. We regularly invest in improving our waste treatment and compliance systems. With tent living adjacent to an industrial chemical facility, permitting may be difficult to achieve and might impair our ability in the future to improve our processing services and desire to continually be the best and most cutting-edge metal surface finisher in the Portland area. Please do not move the R2D2 homeless camp next to this industrial chemical facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Tracy Fink. I'm the plant manager again of Eastside Plating. I'm still the manager. I require all visitors to the facility to sign in and be attended by an ESP employee for their own safety. In addition, ESP has non-disclosure agreements with customers requiring us to secure the view of customer parts and protect their property. In the past, homeless campers have been found wandering the facility unattended, seeking services like tools, electricity, water, restrooms, etc. This has occurred in the past without any formal invitation to 100 campers to sleep nearby. I am worried about controlling and restricting access to our facility. The perimeter of the building on the west and north sides include 4 overhead shipping doors that are regularly left open to support lift truck traffic to the production areas. On warmer days, since it gets hot in the building, opening these doors improves the work environment for my employees. I'm worried about our ability to control the volume of foot traffic that will likely disrupt our operations if a homeless camp is sited next to us. Although it may be R2D2's intention to avoid disrupting our operations, campers/residents change over regularly, and I doubt the effectiveness of their policies being followed or regarded by the host of others waiting for a space in the camp area. Please do not approve a zoning revision allowing tent camping in the IG1 industrial zone.
Thank you. Thank you all.
The next three are Tim Lamb, Linda Crossan, and Dan Yates, and they'll be followed by Michael Withy, Christy White, and Susan Keel.
Tim, I think you're first.
Okay, thank you. My name is Tim Lamb, as I am the business owner of Eastside Plating. Thank you again for my second opportunity to be able to speak to you. Thank you. I'm very concerned about the homeless problem we have in Portland and the direction the city is going to resolve it. I really want to make it clear, I'm not against the homeless, and I'm not against RDD2. As I have a sister that is homeless, too, is in a shelter here in Portland. And it concerns me to think that she's going to be living in a tent next to hazardous chemicals. I would prefer she not be forced to camp there into an industrial area. I guess I'd like to ask a question. Would you place a school next to hazardous chemicals? If not, why? You'd place R2-D2 next to one, and I really see both as vulnerable groups of people. We should care about them. The other thought would be if the city wants to use R2-D2 as a national model for the cities, why would you want to suggest an appropriate setting for them? Do you really want to have the nation see that they're set next to hazardous chemicals? Even though we're very responsible in how we handle our waste and our processes, there's still that exposure. Portland's a large area, and I'm sure there are other choices for R2-D2 because they do need to have some place. But putting them next to hazardous chemicals just isn't one of those places. Please don't move R2-D2 next to a hazardous chemicals. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Linda Crossan, and I too realize that homeless people need a place to live, but I don't think the property next to Eastside Plating is the place for them. I've had adverse encounters with homeless living on the property before. I've been afraid of the fighting that has occurred and of the drug use. Safety is my main concern. Other employees and myself are worried about our safety, especially after dark. We don't want to be afraid to come to work and worry about the number of homeless expanding around the general area as it has occurred at Greeley. When the Portland police cleared the area a couple months ago, hazmat staff needed to help clear the garbage and drug needles. It's my job to talk to customers, and they've complained about when homeless have approached them. I am worried our customers will no longer be willing to pick up or drop off parts for processing at our location. Without customers, Eastside Plating will no longer be in business. Please help us protect Eastside Plating jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Commissioners, good evening, I guess. I optimistically put good afternoon. I'm Dan Yates, property owner of in the Central Eastside Industrial District. I'm here not to discuss the inappropriateness of legalized camping in the city, but to rather propose solid alternatives that eliminate the need for the city to authorize camping. The city has an underutilized public asset in the Governor Tom McCall Waterfront Park that is directly adjacent to the bulk of city services located in Old Town that directly support the homeless community in all stages of their situation. I propose mooring at least one, possibly more, vessels to provide dignified housing. I've tried to interest various city managers in purchasing an available ex-Navy repair barge located in Seattle. This vessel has over 6,400 square feet of living space, is fully plumbed with restrooms and showers, and could easily house over 300-plus people in two enclosed decks. The vessel's cost is $249,000, less than $900 per bunk bed for temporary housing, and is one-tenth the cost of outdoor camping sites. As men are the vast majority of homeless, I would use this for single males. There are two quarter barges for rental or purchase. The 56-passenger quarter barge is for sale for $700,000, and a 90-person quarter barge is available for $1.1 million. These units are completely self-contained with temperature-controlled interiors, full galley, restrooms, four-person cabins, and a laundry. I would reserve these barges for women. A real game-changer would be buying the Catfish Bend Riverboat. This is an inactive casino boat that is about 200 feet long and has a beam of 60 feet, giving her over 24,000 square feet of potential living area. She is fully plumbed and could have its open decks converted to multiple configurations to allow housing for families on one deck, large bunk rooms on the other. This one vessel could easily house, in a climate-controlled environment, over 1,000 people. This vessel is available for less than $700,000. This one asset can make a significant impact on providing dignified alternative housing for presently homeless. If all four vessels were purchased, the total investment would be about $3 million, providing transitional housing for 1,500 people.
I encourage the city to look for alternatives that provide real solutions and also protect every citizen's right. The Willamette River is more than a static display and can play an important role in providing transitional housing while the city constructs more permanent housing on shore. I've included additional pages outlining the alternatives, and I'm stunned that the city has not followed up on this. Ship housing has been used for Olympics. It's been used for earthquakes in San Francisco. You're in a state of an emergency. These vessels are available and could have been in place in November, December, and kept hundreds of people out of the cold.
Thank you very much. Well, I want to make sure that Bob Keita, who's sitting right behind you, gets a copy of your testimony, because we still have about 1,500 or 2,000 more people to house. So thank you.
Buy more boats.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate the constructive
suggestion.
The next three are Michael Withey, Christy White, and Susan Keel, and they'll be followed by Lance Killian, Thomas Bartlett, and Brad Gibson.
Hey, Michael, I think you're first.
Oh, that's great. First, I would just like to say Eastside Plating is Mike Withey. Sorry. I think that Eastside Plating owes us about 50 years worth of parking. And I also think that he should help his sister, the homeless one. So I'm sorry Mr. Fish is not here, because he's speaking for Dan Saltzman, our housing commissioner, today. Unfortunately, I don't know why. My question is for you, Mr. Saltzman, since you're so anti-tent, and you have been for years, I think you will admit that. Will you want to admit it now that you've accepted?
Let's go to the subject matter, Michael.
Right. So this is obvious that we need this place for Right to Dream 2. They're not going to be there past October 31st. They hold 70-plus people per night. The city pays $10,000 per year per homeless person. R2D2 charges nothing. They've charged nothing to the city. They've saved the city millions of dollars. And all we have is one business, Eastside Plating, saying that they're going to ruin their business. They're going to run them under. They're the only business that's going to be even near this homeless camp, right? And yet everything seems to be based on their testimony, how it's going to affect their business, whether a truck can back in or not. They have been using a public parking space, a beat-up old parking lot with holes in it, for 50 years for free. And then once they find out that there's a homeless camp that might go there temporarily, all of a sudden there's half the crew here, right? I think it's just disgusting. They need a place to go, and this is a place they should go. Not only there, but there needs to be about 20 more. You think this is bad? Wait till you tell a neighborhood that you're going to put one of these in their neighborhood. They'll have the entire neighborhood here. That's just one business. So you guys got your work cut out for you, I got to tell you. And Mr. Mayor, I got to congratulate you on the work that you've done. I know that you stuck your neck out for a lot of people. I know that you probably have had a lot of sleepless nights with this problem. So congratulations on the hard work that you've done, and Amanda Fritz, and Mark Lakeman, City Repair Project.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Christy, I think you're next.
Thank you. Christy White on behalf of the CIC Coalition. We can all agree.
Sorry, what's the name of the
club? Oh, Central Eastside Industrial Council Coalition. We can all agree that homelessness is one of the great moral challenges that we're facing in our community, and it needs a humane and immediate solution. I understand that the objections I am going to raise here to the current solution may be uncomfortable, but I have faith, based on my past experience in front of this council, that you'll listen to these concerns, ask me any appropriate questions, and please know that this testimony is not anti-homeless, and it's not anti-right to dream. The city's land use opinion calls this use a community service use, but not a residential community service use. That city finding is essential to allowing the camp at this location. We think there's a fatal flaw in that analysis. The definition of community service use includes two listed examples where people actually reside at the use. Those are mass shelters and short-term housing. The other examples are non-residential. Here's the key to that distinction. The code expressly prohibits the residential community service use on industrial land, but expressly permits the non-residential community service use on industrial land. So the simple question is this: are the tent campers using the site for residential purposes? I think they are. The use would therefore be prohibited. But the zoning opinion argues that the tent camps are less like a prohibited residential mass shelter and more like a non-residential use and are therefore allowed. Let me quickly address those arguments. The zoning opinion concludes that the definition of mass shelter implies a roof. Because the camp doesn't have a roof, the opinion finds that it's less like a residential mass shelter, even though the purpose of the camp is residential. That analysis turns the code on its head. If you have a roof on a residential use, you're not allowed on industrial land. If you take the roof off or the fence down, you are still residential, but you're allowed on residential land. That creates more conflict with the industrial uses and more exposure. The zoning opinion actually acknowledges that the uses where people reside for more than 30 days is a residential use and prohibited, or arranges tenancy for more than 30 days. I'll wrap up.
Do you have your testimony in writing?
Can I finish this sentence, please?
Well, obviously, we're going to read through and very carefully digest your comments before we take any vote. So,
Well, thank you. Gave other people up to 2 or 3 minutes. I'd like to know the rest of the testimony.
Go ahead. Oh, okay, thank you. So campers are allowed to stay here for more than 30 days. There's an agreement or arrangement that they're not terminated after 30 days, and there's 14 permanent resident dreamers. What that means to me is they're staying longer than 30 days. In that case, it's a residential use and therefore also a prohibited use in the code. I was going to turn to a solution and a pledge on that solution, but I just hope you would read that in our written testimony that I'll submit into the record. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Susan Keel again, chair of the board of OMSI, and I'm someone that's worked hard to help build Portland into a vibrant and successful city. I'm absolutely dismayed that we have come to this, forcing people to camp on industrial land. Those in the homeless community deserve compassion and respect, not to be swept under a tarp next to freight rails and hazardous materials and away from services. Our concerns can be boiled down to 3 points. The move's going to cause irreparable harm to the area, not just to East Side Plating. The perception that this camp poses a public safety threat will undoubtedly deter visitors to the area at a cost. It moves a project forward on an interpretation of the ZCL that is an illegal use. Christy just talked about it. It's going to exacerbate the already overwhelming occurrence of camping in the Central East Side. Nothing has been done to address the current situation of tents sprawled throughout the area, nor have we been given any indication that with 100 more people living there and people coming during the daytime, that anything is going to be done about that. A lack of enforcement of the tent camping laws means you're choosing to ignore any complaints of your other constituents. We have no recourse once the tents go up. For years, the camp on the west side has been in violation of city code. Commissioner Salzman tried to deal with that and ignored enforcement orders. It undermines the very policies and plans that you've sworn to uphold. That's the zoning code and the Southeast Quadrant Plan. It puts the general fund at risk due to the liability. You've got a choice here, and I have assumed City Council was in a position to lead. I'd really like to have you do that with a solution that doesn't divide us, that brings us together.
Thank you. Next.
The next three are, we're on number 16, Lance Killian, Thomas Bartlett, and Brad Gibson. And they'll be followed by Wade A. Varner, Sarah Carlston, and M.K. Katie Bresch.
Hey, good afternoon. Go
ahead. Oh, my name is Brad Gibson. I'm vice chair of the Right to Dream Board. And I have sitting in front of me the documents for backing into the, I know this is an issue, and I'm an ex-truck driver with hazmat endorsement, and I could make this hole in, you know, with one eye tied behind my back. Also, the tankers that is depicted here is a 10-wheeler and a pup. They did not put that on the visual up there, but see, that was a 53 smoothbore tanker, okay, which can easily hit that hole even with the telephone pole there. And with a 15-foot easement, okay. Most holes that truckers get into are 12 foot. From, you know, you have 2 foot on each side, and the next truck has the same 2 feet. So, you know, that's, you walk through any truck stop. I mean, you it's an awful thin area there, right? Well, like I said, with the hazmat, I often got stuck out in traffic, backing up into certain holes, and it happens all the time here in Portland. So I don't see anything without a couple of one or two spotters that they couldn't hit that hole, being it is 15 feet across. That's an easy one to hit. So I'm sorry, but I don't agree with that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Balkin.
Good evening, Council. My name is Lance Killian. I'm here speaking on behalf of Killian Pacific. We're a local family-owned real estate-focused company who works on enhancing community. Killian Pacific Associated Entities have developed and are in the process of developing 4 city blocks very close to the Southeast 3rd and Harrison site. We have invested in the immediate neighborhood in an effort to develop and provide compelling work environments for family wage jobs and supporting services. Just down the street from 3rd and Harrison, we're creating our city's first high-rise heavy timber office building that will house Simple Bank's headquarters. And we restored our city's oldest reinforced concrete office building to become one of its most energy-efficient buildings as part of Viewpoint Software's headquarters expansion. Our city's top job-creating firms have responded and will number in excess of 1,000 employees working at full completion, working within a 4-to-5-block radius of this site. We believe the decision to locate a homeless camp in this immediate area is counterproductive to the city's goals and objectives related to sustainable economic development, publicly supported planning and zoning, and long-term return on public investment and infrastructure. But most importantly, we're concerned this proposal isn't humane, nor is it a viable and long-term solution. We encourage you to address one of the most pressing human topics in our city with inspired and empathic leadership. We urge you to set a game-changing higher goal on this topic and utilize the incredible resources we have in this community that are ready, willing, and able to assist you. Draft off of best practices infused with our own Portland way of doing things. We understand that there are such bold visions being discussed in your very own city-sponsored organization, A Home for Everyone. Please be the leaders we can look up to and desire to follow, and we will rally behind you. The location of a tent camp on the Southeast 3rd and Harrison site isn't appropriate for 5 site-specific reasons. There are no services near the property to support the people who would be living there. Second, this isn't a residential area, and for good reason. Third, safety. As you've heard a lot already today, the adjacent heavy industrial use uses highly flammable materials and hazardous products. Fourth, public process. The city of Portland is known internationally for its integrity and quality of its urban planning. Your own Planning and Sustainability Commission voted to not support this. Why would you disregard that? Last, economic development. Along with established stable companies, this immediate area is enjoying a renaissance and becoming one of the densest employment areas in the Central East Side with a high technology cluster of companies such as Viewpoint and Simple. We implore you to not miss the opportunity this crisis represents to set a bold vision that will create a humanitarian, lasting, positive community result for which we can all be proud, not just a continuation of the present in a different, inferior location. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Okay, next.
Was there a Thomas Bartlett? Okay. Then we'll go with number 19, Wade Varner, Sarah Carlston, and MK Katie Brecht. And they'll be followed by number 22, Joe Levesque, Tim McCormick, and Mike Summers.
Okay, welcome. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Wade Varner with Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HAHA as we're known to our friends. I personally know, as a son of a 46-year Teamster, that you are required to be able to back 250 feet in a 12-foot hole before you get your driver's license, so there's no problem at all with backing into that small of a place. And I personally lived under the over ramp of 405 here, where the old plating company was right across the street, and it doesn't seem to have done anything to me.
I'm sorry. Let me interrupt you for a second. Mr. Davis, this is not okay. You're going to need to have a seat and let people come participate in their city council meeting without being harassed. Thank you. Go have a seat, please. Go ahead. Sorry. Their seats. We'll make sure one's available to you. Go ahead.
As somebody who was homeless or living in a van for 21 years and finally got off the streets through the VASH program because I'm a veteran, I'm a disabled veteran, we need to find places in neighborhoods where you can do it. They found it in Chicago when they tore all the things down. They built these small 20, 25 housing units in the neighborhoods of the area, and they found out that the crime and the gang rates dropped like by 75%. We need to do that with the homeless population in here. Get them out among the folks, let them know what's going on, get them in a camp where they can be supervised and allowed to be able to have a phone and other uses for the, and as far as over there for toilets and stuff like that, I've been saying this for years. Take a 40-foot container, you can put showers and toilets inside those. The nice part about it is you have one intake and three outlets where you can put it, and then you can pick those up, put them on a trailer, and move them to someplace if it becomes undesirable for that location to do, which it's going to be, because sooner or later they're going to build condos on it because it's the only place close in you can build condos anymore. So I could see in 10 years, 20 years ago, when I was homeless living in Northwest, I mean, I can't believe what it's done, and it's great. But if we do not take care of the poor people in this town, which is why we have a thing, I've sat there and watched thousands of units of low-income housing, the old hotels and stuff, be demolished for all these new buildings, and yet we're not building the replacements for these thousands of people.
Thank you.
So, the containers and everything else, those kind of things can work and will work, and they have worked in other cities. Please do not stop looking at every single thing that we can do to do this. Thank you.
Thank you. We won't. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Sarah Carlston. I just wanted to say that I support Right to Dream 2 and everything that they do. They helped me and my husband stay together and to find housing and to find jobs and go back to school. And it's a great thing to have when there aren't any other options at that time. I think that them moving to this area isn't going to cause all the problems that people think. I think that that's mostly ignorance and fear. And I think that once it's out there, that people will realize that it's not going to draw all this crime and it's not going to draw a whole bunch of homeless people that are going to crawl in your doors when they're open in the summertime just to see what they can find. And I think that focusing on a truck backing up is a ridiculous way to deal with a situation. And Right to Dream 2 isn't a permanent solution, but it's one that exists now and it works now, so it should still be accessible to people until something else can be done.
Thank you. I'm really glad to hear you and your husband are doing better.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Katie Bretch, and I've lived in Southeast Portland since the 70s and been active in land use issues there. I've served on the Southeast Uplift Land Use Committee, land use chair of two different neighborhood associations, and was the chair of Sunnyside Land Use when we did the last neighborhood plan in 1996. All of that said, the biggest, most spectacular ass I ever made of myself was right here in one of these chairs talking about homeless issues. So I'm here to try to, recapture some dignity by offering you something useful, hopefully this time. So three things that I want to bring, and the first is from my experience with the land use business, is that throughout all of that activity, inclusion, inclusion, inclusion was always a theme in every survey that we did, every conversation that we had with neighbors. All through all those many decades, Southeast has always been very dedicated to the economic justice component of housing and keeping the lowest income people with us throughout all that time. And So that, I think, is a really important finding for your process here. The other two things that I want to offer are what I think are evidence-based things that might help mitigate some of the resistance. And one of those is when I was here making an ass of myself was over what was going on in Sunnyside at the time, and a bunch of us were really head up and had these misconceptions like the attraction theory and all of that with problems we were having there. And when the Police Bureau ran their Tired of Tweakers missions, suddenly all these things we'd been objecting to disappeared. And I'll send some notes with more information about that. The other thing is that there's a huge evidence base for big deciduous trees being positive both environmentally and for community acceptance of facilities that might otherwise be rejected. And again, I'll send some notes on that, but I think those are all evidence-based things that I'd hope you'd consider.
Thank you very much.
And yes, we are hoping to look after the big trees that are currently on the site. Thank you.
The next three are number 22, Joe Levesky, Tim McCormick, and Mike Summers. And they'll be followed by Lisa Fay, Mike Jenkins, and Rodney Wall.
I'm just trying to get around you there. There we go.
I'm last.
Me too.
Okay. Go ahead, please, while he's getting settled.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners, mayor. My name is Tim McCormick, and I run a project called Houselets, which is exploring and prototyping low-cost housing solutions for low-income and homeless populations. For the last couple years, I've been researching and visiting homeless and low-income housing around the country on the West Coast. And I'm in the area just recently. I'm a Portland native living here part-time. We've heard a lot of testimony and issues about the risks and the downsides, and I want to acknowledge that that's legitimate, and this may not be the ideal site. I'm struck by the thought of how comfortable would I be next to this facility. But the truth of the matter is every site has issues. Every place you go to is going to be a battle, and there will be a bunch of people who will come out. And in the meantime, if you don't do something, a whole community of people will be left on the street at risk of death. And, you know, I'd like to think of this as the great positive potential of this project. And from my perspective, which is pretty comparative, I've been looking at things all over, it's become clear to me that Portland stands out in the world. It's looked to around the world now as a leader in pragmatic, innovative solutions. That includes Dignity Village, Caravan, Tiny House Hotel, and Right to Dream. And cities all over the world and the country have these same problems that we have, but virtually nowhere are people being as pragmatic and down-to-earth as Portland is and saying, you know what, this isn't perfect, it's not our ideal site, but we're not going to kick this down the road for another few years. We're going to do something now, learn from it, and maybe improve upon it. So I really want to urge you not to not let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and realize that people accommodated now is more important than perhaps some fine point of how the planning you'd like to have, you know, on the east side. That can be worked out, but someone dying on the street tonight can't be worked out.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
Next?
Sure, go ahead.
I was here a couple of weeks ago. You weren't there.
I'm back.
You were there.
We remember you.
You remember me? I sent you some stuff through Susan. Did you guys get copies of it? Did you read that stuff?
Just put your and when you start tonight, just put your name in the record again.
The name is Joe Levesque, L-E-V-E-S-Q-U-E. I'm an old builder, developer. I built affordable homes. I built a lot of affordable homes. You people here are doing the best you know how to do. You're the victim of what's going on. Well, what's going on has been going on for a long time. There's nothing new with the housing problem. There's nothing new with the affordable problems. This, what he's talking about here, we were thinking about that 60 years ago. I sent you a copy of a home that was built in 33 hours. Did you get a copy of that? Should have got that. I want to get involved with that one there, but I don't want to talk about that right now. This morning when I got up, you know, I live with this stuff. You do this for a living, and I'm not doing it for a living right now. I don't like what's happening. I don't like what's happening to my country. I used to know this country when it was a free country. Free. People think this is a free country. It's not a free country like it used to be. And yeah, when I got up this morning, I made a list. I ended up with 24 notes concerning housing. Here's one that I picked up, the Columbian. There's a picture here. The politicians are making a big dog and pony show out of this thing. It's 30 units that caters to the homeless people, just like these guys around here are. $6 million. That's $200,000 a unit. For your information, years ago, I go back a long time, we built these things. And there's a problem with those kind of units. When people move in on a studio apartment, 400 square foot, and furnish them, they get tired, or they get a girlfriend, then they get married, then they get a one-bedroom. Then they have to have a kid, then they get a two-bedroom. Then after they get a two-bedroom, they want to get a house. That's the place we should be. Anyhow, I'm down to nothing here.
Well, we appreciate it. Make sure you send us copies of that, if you haven't already.
Anyhow, what I was going to say, one more thing. I'd like to have you people write a letter to Washington State University based on the information that I gave you, and let them know to have them look into the All-American Financial Aid and Relief Program. No one has ever told me that this can't work. Now, there's five laws that have to do with housing, whether you know it or not. I'm going to try to educate you here.
Not now.
Not now.
Thank you, though.
Mr. Levesque, I really appreciate you coming in a second time. You've really been helpful. Claire Adamski is on my staff is here, and she's going to give you a card. If you have time to come in and talk with me in my office, I'd love to hear more of your advice.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you all. Okay.
Now it's my turn. I'm Mike Summers. I'm with Right to Dream, too. Within the last 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month, I've heard the argument about how inhumane sleeping in the tent is. Well, is it humane to see somebody sleeping on the sidewalk or in a doorway with no protection over their head? Is it humane to see a homeless person going through the garbage can to get their next meal, or panhandling to get a couple bucks to go up to McDonald's and order off the value menu? I mean, is this, you know, I may have a warped sense of what humane is, but that ain't it. And as far as, you know, the guys from East Coast Plating, I've worked in a company for 15 years that had or does have a anodizing line that anodized 25-foot pieces of metal. So I do have some type, you know, of understanding of if there's a spill, what to do. You know, if we do move over there, and by the way, I do support the move, you know, I could do it very easily. You know, I could learn it very easily because I've had some experience with it. Other than that, I'm all for the move. I want to see us be able to help just a few more people. You know, maybe lift them up and see if they can get their lives turned around. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next three are number 25, Lisa Fay, Mike Jenkins, and Rodney Wall. And they will be followed by number 29, Tammy Moody, Earl Moody, and Ibrahim Mubarak.
Okay, come on up. Oh, could somebody move the chair out of the way for you there? There we go. Come on up. Welcome. Go ahead.
I'll let her speak.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor Hales and Amanda and Josh Albert and Mark Lakeman and the host and myriad of other people that have helped to support Right to Dream 2 and support this move.
Just put your name in ARCA 2.
Oh, I'm Lisa Fay. I'm chairperson of Right to Survive, former board member of Right to Dream 2, and helped to establish the model that we have now. It astounds me that we have been at 4th and Burnside since October of 2011. We've been